Hello and welcome to another episode of Matinee Mondays here on the Remnants of Reese's Remember All. Today we're doing an older episode. This is one of the episodes that was mentioned in the channel trailer, so take some time, sit back, relax, and please remember, all of the socials are outdated, and enjoy.
And welcome back to another episode of Robert's Reviews. All right, now, I know it's been a little bit of time since I last uploaded. There's been a lot going on, so much right now. Business changes for me with a couple of the organizations that I've been working with in my personal life. Personal life, there's been some major shifts recently happening. Right now, as you can probably tell, my voice sounds a little bit different. We're using different equipment, so I sound a little funky and a little off. So there's nothing really too much to worry about on that score. We're trying to get some of the other equipment repaired. This is just a for now situation. So bear with me while we try to figure this out. And of course, the we is always myself and my main tech guy, my dear darling husband, who has been absolutely wonderful through this process in helping me understand some of this tech stuff. One of the other things that I wanted to let you know, upcoming soon, I don't know how soon it'll be, simply because we're getting ready to do some housework, some renovations, and some moving around of my recording space. So because of all of that, I've lost some of the work that I was going to be putting forth, hopefully, in this. Well, what I had hoped would be this episode. Turns out, not so much. What it was going to be a reimagining of the casting for the 1997 Disney film Hercules. I did want to do that one right off the bat coming back, because we know they're getting ready to do it. Just was hoping for a little bit more realism, I want to say, on their part on their port. Yeah. So if I can find that'll make things easier, but it might be about a month or two down the line before I'm able to find that. Hopefully I can find it much sooner. Because I started scribbling notes down on loose leaf. Never a good idea. Keep all of your stuff together. Keep it all together and keep it all in one spot. I did not learn that lesson, and now I regret it. Which that's a recurring lesson. No idea why it's a recurring lesson, but... Well, it's because I'm stubborn and I don't learn the lesson the first time. However, today's episode is going to be going over the 2009 film Avatar. As you could tell by the title and the film poster up front on the main page of the episode. So, it's been 10 years since Avatar debuted in theaters. Now, there's a big thing recently, as many people know, especially... Well, I mean, it's kind of hard to miss unless you've been living under a rock. Avatar was just surpassed by Endgame. And I do have some details on that. where both films are at, both domestically and internationally. A lot of people say that it's only international. Some say it's only domestic in the country that the film was produced and made. I like to keep track of both when it comes to a competition like this, when people start getting all uppity and antsy about where a movie's going to fall. To me, it doesn't really matter much where it falls, because there are some really big popular films that are garbage, as we know, especially recently because of the split between critics and audiences. Now, there is a wonderful YouTuber that I'm going to be recommending in this episode. She did a review of this not too long ago, I don't think. I think it was this year as well. Might have been last year. But it got me to thinking about it, because one of the things that Caitlin said was that Avatar reached this high point, and after that, it became a bit of a, well, guilty pleasure. I think mostly because the veneer wore off, the spectacle of it faded, and people began to look at the story and look at the themes and yada yada yada, and they just didn't like it. Or it was Pocahontas in space, which, I mean, come on, redoing Pocahontas in a new way for audiences everywhere is, well, that's just smart. Plus, it's a good introduction to this world, and part of a, well, James Cameron had hoped that it would be a trilogy, and I still do hope that it'll be a trilogy. So there's going to be more. Hoping, I think something I saw said next year, but I don't know. I'm hoping next year we get the sequel, or the second installment of the trilogy. That would be really amazing. I'm going to be covering the theatrical release. The YouTuber in question, she does a review over the director's cut, and that makes a difference. It really does. Anytime you can get the director's cut of anything, it makes a difference. So if you have the opportunity to see the director's cut of Avatar, granted, not to be confused with The Last Airbender, a film we do not speak of, and if you guys do want to see a shredding of The Last Airbender, please let me know. Go ahead and let me know down in the comments or on social media, contact through the website, however you want to let me know. Just go ahead and do that. I would really be interested to know what kind of film garbage you want to put me through. The YouTuber's name is Caitlin Coy, and I am so sorry. I hope I'm saying that last name right. I will put the link to the video in question in the link of the episode this week. So just go ahead, give that a watch. It's very well edited, very well put together. So go ahead, do that. You can either do that right now or you can do that after. Doesn't matter. If you go and do that now, just be sure to come on back and finish this up, because her review is just 23 and a half minutes long. And this is shaping up to be a little bit longer than that. Well, by a little bit, I mean quite a bit, because I haven't even gotten started, and we're almost at 9 minutes. Now we're at 9 minutes. So, go ahead, do that, and I'll give you a moment. For those who want to go over and listen to that, I'll give you a pause. Okay, now, Avatar 2009. Genre is fantasy, science fiction. Now, it would be sci-fi fantasy, but they reorganized how that's done, and it's apparently a little bit more fantasy than sci-fi, so interesting. I would have put it the other way around, but that's just me. What do I know? It is rated PG-13. Yeah, it earned its PG-13 rating. It has a runtime of 2 hours and 42 minutes. That translates into 162 minutes. As I said, the release was in 2009. So this is a 10-year anniversary. Woo! Not for this show. I wish. Haven't been going that long. Avatar had a budget of $237 million and a return of $2.79 billion. Now, that is a huge, massive turnaround, and that just goes to show how well this movie was done and how much of an impact it had when it came out. Though, funny enough, it did lose to The Hurt Locker, which I think it's kind of ironic. Not so much film v film, but like James Cameron put out this big movie and he lost to, I think it was his ex-wife. I think that was the thing that I saw, that he lost the award. I think it was for Best Picture. He lost that to his wife. Well, his ex-wife, which is really kind of funny, but you know that there's something probably going on there, but they both handled it very well. Like he handled it very well, which is good because, you know, we don't need Kanye showing up and everything going, I'm gonna let you finish, but you know, we don't need that. That's not needed. And I'm glad that they were mature enough to be able to handle this. As I said, this was directed by James Cameron, written by James Cameron, and the music was composed by James Horner. Okay, and here is where I also have the box office placement set. Domestically, it came in, it now sits at number 3. It held the number 1 spot domestically until Star Wars The Force Awakens, which holds number 1 still to this day. So Endgame still hasn't beaten The Force Awakens. I mean, an installment that continues on a family legacy. I mean, The Force Awakens was a big deal when it hit. I don't think it's as all that as some people still think it is, but, you know, I'll probably do an episode on that. I'll probably do a couple of nerdy episodes like that and just get the saga out of the way. But, yeah. And Endgame is at the second place spot. So, Endgame didn't take number 1 domestically. Globally, Avatar is in second place, and it held its spot for just about 10 years, right around there. So I'm just going to say it took a decade of film from 2009 to 2019. It took a decade of film in order to dethrone this movie. And we can really get into why that is here today. So, moving on to the cast. Now, the casting was so good. Okay, Sam Worthington as Jake Sully. Zoe Saldana as Neytiri. Sigourney Weaver as Dr. Grace Augustine. Stephen Lang as Colonel Miles Quaritch. Michelle Rodriguez as Trudy. Giovanni Ribisi as Parker Selfridge. Joel David Moore as Dr. Norm Spellman. Now, IMDb and Wikipedia and them have him listed as just Norm Spellman, but he introduces himself as Dr. Norm Spellman. So, meh. He earned that title. Don't you take that away from him. Alright. CCH Pounder as Moat. CCH is so amazing. So, I'm going to geek out over her later. Wes Studi as Etukan. Laz Alonso as Sute. Dilip Rao as Dr. Max Patel. Max Gerald as Corporal Lyle Wainfleet. Scott Lawrence as the crew chief. Here's where I usually have preliminary thoughts, but this week I don't really have any. Mainly because, well, it's been 10 years since it debuted. And, well, I gotta say, I don't really remember too much about my initial viewing and what I was thinking going into it. So this is just one of those, let's see if it holds up, let's see how well it does, and we're just gonna go from there. So without further ado, as I said, no director's cut today, it's theatrical release. Scott Lawrence in the beginning, really liked that. He's right out of the gate, you know, landing down, crew chief right there in your face. I liked that. He's got a presence. He gets you to pay attention. So the use of that character really kind of was to just get you to pay attention. You are no longer in Kansas kind of ordeal. The narration is problematic to some people, but for me, it's like we're reviewing this as his final log. You know, it's the final log entry where he details everything, and that is something important to the story. So understanding everything from that context of this is, you know, his final video log entry, his final vlog before he shuts off his YouTube. Sorry, wait, did that hit a little too close to home? Maybe. But still, the point is it's narration. It makes sense. Yeah, is narration a little overused in media and in film? I think probably, but at the same time, is it really that overused that maybe, maybe not, you know? It has its place. It really does. Narration has its place, and I think here it does serve a purpose. It does do something for the story. Now, as far as the tech goes, I mean, you see part of it from the beginning where we've advanced as a society, as a planetary body. This advancement that we have built in some of the director's cut scenes, the deleted scenes, and it's seen on Earth, but when on Pandora, it all looks a bit more cleaned up, probably because it's a corporate situation. It is a company setting, so of course it's going to look a little bit more cleaned up and a little bit more professional, whereas personal tech is going to seem a little bit more grubby. That's how a lot of futuristic sci-fi will put it. It personal looks a little more grubby. I mean, look at Blade Runner 2049. Look at Blade Runner the original. I mean, personal tech was a little bit more run down and corporate was a little bit more polished. And I like that. And the level of tech that they have there that they're displaying is beautiful. And we're already working on that. And in some areas, we do have a little bit of that starting to come up, but it pushed those boundaries. And I liked that. And plus, it also wasn't just a pushing of the boundary. It was a viable next step. You know, it was a viable look at where tech could and probably would be going. So that was just grade A memes. I mean, tech. What? Now, here's also where, you know, you get that whole thing with Grace and all of the other scientists and the debriefing and all of that. It sets up, it moves very quickly. It doesn't drag, it doesn't lag through exposition and meeting of characters. You meet Norm, you meet Max right out of the gate, you meet Quaritch. You know, and then you meet Grace, who is, her first lines are, "Where's my cigarette? What is wrong with this picture?" This is a woman who has been pushed to the brink and is ready to snap somebody's neck. This is a woman you do not want to mess with. This is a woman who has seen some crap and come back. This is a woman who is brilliant, intelligent, and is done with crap. She is there as basically a outer space biologist and she's an all-around scientist in every Starfleet sense of the word, and she's being overrun by a company and a mercenary operation to destroy the planet that they've found here. Like, that's just some bogus crap. So she puts up with so much. She goes through so much. And when you meet her, you can instantly tell. You can clearly immediately tell. And her banter with Jake is prime. That is prime banter. Like, It almost seems like they're just standing on formality of like, I'm a scientist, you're a military guy, we're not supposed to get along, but like you can tell that they know they're gonna be like best friends. Like, it's weird because it seems like it was shot near the end of their filming schedule, but also at the same time that kind of seems right because it kind of sets up their future dynamic where they just kind of are constantly giving each other crap and moving ahead. So I think it was a good foundation, and it really sets the tone for the two of them. Like, they're not going to take crap from each other, and they're not going to take crap from anybody. Now, one of the other comments that I always make, and I don't know how many other people out there make this, so if you're one of the people that make this comment, please, please, please let me know. So, you make this comment, gotta let me know. Okay? Deal? Deal. Now, the planet that the moon Pandora is orbiting is just a blue Jupiter. Okay, that's just Zeus on a sad day or sad millennium, whatever. But it's basically just a blue Jupiter. Wait, does that mean Zeus is now part of the Blue Man Group? Crap. Well, there goes the neighborhood. as the film continues on and Jake begins to understand his predicament, especially after, you know, getting into the Avatar and going on his first mission with basically no training, like, at all, right? So he's winging it. He's winging it because it was supposed to be his brother in the body, right? So the bioluminescence at night after Neytiri saves him. Wonderful. Okay, that is beautiful. I really like that design choice. And it still holds up. I mean, come on. It still looks good. It still sounds good. The story still resonates to today. I mean, come on. What more could you ask for? I mean, it's been 10 years. There are movies that are 5 years old that just don't hold up. There are movies a year old that don't hold up anymore. Avatar is one that I think it's going to take about another 10 years before it starts to look a little dated. You know? And yeah, I mean, right out of the gate when, you know, you've got the guys in the masks outside and there's all the mech around. It's kind of clear. It was back then, and it always is. That level of seamlessness, I don't see happening for a while. And it's supposed to, in this case, it's supposed to seem alien. It's supposed to seem foreign. So seeing humans, regular-sized people on this planet, in this atmosphere, in this environment, it's supposed to seem like we're out of place because, well, hello, we are out of place. We're the ones out of place. We're the ones who don't belong here, which it is what it is. I mean, we're not supposed to be there. It's a foreign planet, but some part of the human existence is exploration. So, we're there, but the other part is corporate greed. So here we are. Seems a little familiar, right? Now, this goes out to the YouTuber who made that review. So, Caitlin, if you are hearing this, this little note that I made goes right out to you. Neytiri held back from the message from Godbit when saving Jake because he's an outsider. To someone outside of the clan, outside of the people, you're not really going to necessarily be going, hey, yeah, it was a sign from my god to spare your life earlier, and I was going to kill you, and I got a sign from God, and now this just kind of double confirms it because it's a second sign from God. He is a complete outsider and is someone that they are really at this point not trusting. The Omotakai don't trust the Sky People. Don't trust the Terrans, Earthlings, whatever you want to call us. They don't trust us. So, of course, they're not going to say anything. I wouldn't. That's just me. I wouldn't lay that kind of information bare at all. I mean, maybe you might, but that's just not me. And it's also not the culture of the Omatakai, and it's not the culture that Neytiri is grown up in. Be leery, be weary. So, yeah. Nah. So there's that for you, Caitlin. After he gets there and all of that, and comes back, there's a moment where Grace is aware of what's going on. She's been made aware, and that's why they move. Jake knows that Grace knows that he's up to something, and neither one of them are really playing close to the chest. They're just not telling each other things, and they're not doing anything at all to hide it. And they want to be called out and have a confrontation, but they're too respectful and professional to do that, I guess. I don't really know why. An exploration of that, of their relationship at that point, and all of that would have been nice. But, I mean, hey, Grace dies. Oops, spoilers. It's been 10 years. If you haven't seen it, come on. Anyway, the whole point is that they're like, we're going to the mountains. We're going to the Hallelujah Mountains. The floating islands are so beautiful and so amazing. I would really like to know some science behind, you know, that phenomenon. I kind of like it. I would like to know how that works. Just because I'm that person. I do. So hopefully maybe James Cameron sequel put a little bit of that in there, or, you know, don't. I'm cool with it. I'll just go with it. But I would like some explanation for your world, you know, having floating mountains and stuff. Yeah, so come on, give us that sciencey goodness, because they are absolutely beautiful, and I love them. The use of them throughout the film, and especially at the fight at the end. Oh, so great, so brilliant, love it. In my notes, I have it put down here that Grace moves Jake. They go there just so Grace can move Jake away from Colonel Jackass. I mean, it's kind of true. He is so annoying and so vicious. Quaritch is one of those that just comes off as someone you wouldn't want to be friends with, someone you wouldn't even really want to associate with, because he's blinded by rage constantly. In a sense, he rules through fear. Like, he has little Mr. Selfridge by the cojones through nothing more than fear. He rules that entire compound. And I don't know, maybe I don't like that. I think Grace would have been better to be in charge of the whole operation. So, yeah. I've also had a couple of people that I've known through the years make comments on Grace breaking in behind Jake while they're at the mountains during that span of time. One of the video logs, she busts in behind him and is talking about, you know, this, that, and the other about how he needs to behave, how he needs to remember these things. And it's like, why would you do that? That's so rude. And it's like, because when you go back and you review these later, that's going to be there. It's to place a reminder in your head. Also, for those reviewing it that are within the company and, you know, other scientists, it's going to show that she's not just kind of sitting there doing nothing in the background, that she is aware of what's going on around her. While also, yeah, maybe she should be a little more focused on what she's doing, playing with chemicals and stuff and samples. So, you know, maybe it would be a good idea to focus a little more on that, Grace. But she's a good scientist. She's been doing this for many years. So, meh. Yeah, that's kind of the theme of this one is meh, which is the tongue sticky outy maneuver. Okay, so the use of foreshadowing, it's simple and effective. Okay, so Jake turning, that's pretty obvious. Like, that, a lot of people were able to call that, like, the moment he was able to use his legs in the Avatar body. I know people who saw that the first time and were like, yep, he gonna be in that by the end. And it's like, you sure? Yeah, it's obvious. Like, and then Grace saying, oh, the tree here, the sacred tree. I would die to get samples. I would die to go there. Well, sorry, Grace, but you did, and you went there. I mean, you win some, you lose some, and sometimes you're calling it too easy, so just be careful what you wish for, I guess. It's hard to talk about Avatar without talking about the weird mating scene after Jake becomes one of the Omotikai people. And he looks at Neytiri and says, well, I've already chosen. And then Neytiri just says, so has she. And off they go. It's different. He adapted so well to that. Like, but, you know, with the whole thing with the ponytail. And it's just like, you know, he's been dealing with this for a little while. So this is just kind of like another step for him. And it's a little weird, but it also kind of makes sense as a progression. And did we need what we got of that? It could have been a little bit more implied. But, I mean, we have an entire Area 51 raid happening right here in the U.S. Yes, it's a joke, but I've known some people commenting up, going on the event page and on the Facebook page, the groups for it, going, I'm actually going and I'm going to clap those alien cheeks. So, I mean, there's something for everybody out there. I mean, so I guess James Cameron is a little bit to blame for this Area 51 raid, because, you know, clapping them alien cheeks, he kind of set a bar. Why is this a thing? Like, come on, guys. Area 51 raid? Seriously? No. Anyway, I just had to have a moment, and that's the only reason why I discussed that scene, is because, really, no, don't do the thing. But if you're going to do the thing, do it hilariously, because the rest of us need something to laugh at. Because, okay, so then right after that scene is the point in which they reach Home Tree. Like, that's where they roll up. And they're talking about doing this humanely, and they're talking about doing this forced relocation humanely. A forced relocation that's going to turn into a genocide event. There's no other word for it. I mean, it's basically a genocide event. There's no such thing as a peaceful relocation. And they're supposed to be in our future, and they should know that doesn't exist. Throughout all of human history, a forced relocation does not go well. It only benefits those in power. And those in power are this company. Hands down, okay? Corporations are evil. We need to fight them. They bought our politicians and stooges and lobbyists, and those are their people. Those are the people that these corporations have bought. So we need to fight them. So, I mean, there's another layer to the message here, too. It's just like, wake up, because it's not kings making these calls anymore. It's not political leaders making these calls anymore. It's corporations who are backed by politicians. They're just going to look at their political buddies and go, hey, we paid for this. We paid you for this. Make it happen, or we'll destroy you. Backdoor deals. I mean, come on. It's happening now. It was happening then, too. So, I mean, come on. It's going to happen. It's going to be a thing. That whole scene with Home Tree burning and that, that hurt. That hurt me. That, frankly, that pissed me off. I mean, it was such a beautiful ecosystem that they had in the Home Tree, too. It was just so beautiful. And then they just blew it up. And he's like, all right, it's blown up. They all dead. They're all going to die. Let's go home. Like, dude, what the heck are you doing? What the crap are you doing over here? What are you doing? Why? You're not going to stick around? No, you're just there to blow stuff up and then go home. Yeah, now you see why I called him Colonel Jackass. I mean, he really is. He really, really is. And that really is, he hits like such a classic villain with the attitude and mentality of, because I can. Why did you do this? Why did you blow up an entire city? Because I can. On one hand, there is a depth to Quaritch that one day I might cover. I might do a villain introspection series and just start dissecting some of the villains of film and TV. And I might cover him. I might not. I don't know. Because there is a psychology to the bad guys. It's kind of swept a lot of fans is trying to understand the evil, because you're not just born evil. It's a culmination of life choices and circumstances that you find yourself in. But I mean, at the same time, he's still just kind of a 2D villain, but there's more to him. But I don't want to look at more because I don't like him. He bad guy. And also in this moment where Holmtree is burning to the ground and just falling apart and going boom, and everybody's running away and trying to stand and fight, in some cases miserably failing, at this point anyway, the music swells to such a point where it punctuates, and it really drives this moment home. All of the pain, the anguish, and even there are some undertones that just highlight the evil act that this really is and how detrimental this is, because the Na'vi, the Omotikai tribe, and Grace and Jake are, you know, the heroes, are the good guys. Jake, he has a couple of missteps, but all in all, he's the good guy. He's the hero, and his missteps make him the good guy, because good people aren't, we have our flaws too. We try our best to be good, decent, wholesome people, but sometimes it's difficult to do. It's hard to be the good guy 24/7, and we make mistakes. We're taken in by people who we think are one way and they're another. So he made an honest mistake, and he paid for it, and an entire tribe of people paid for it too. Some lessons are really hard, but he learned, and he made up for it. Because, yeah, the final fight, when he comes back with the big old bird, that was just such a powerful scene. But also, he kind of had that bad boy swagger. He just kind of hops off, goes, yeah, what's up? But he also does it from a place of humility, which only goes to show his growth. Even though Sam Worthington doesn't exactly show a vocal range, he does have an expressive range. And it's not so much against Sam himself, is, or the character, or Sam, is it's just that's how some people are. They're not very expressive in their face or in their voice unless you really know them. So you rely on people around the person to be able to gauge what's going on here. Everybody knows a couple of people like this. Either you work with them, you're friends with them, or they're in your family. And it can be really difficult to tell what's going on with them and what they're saying when they don't really have a wide range of expression. That, I think, it's important to see. It's good to see. I do like Sam Worthington as an actor. But there are moments here where a little bit more of expression would have been helpful to the overall narrative. Thankfully, the supporting cast and the other leading cast members around him know enough about that type to be able to play off of that and really work into that. And it also could have been very well the character. You know, he's had a couple of characters that were very flat in tone. And hey, if you can make that work, make that work. And for some people, that's a challenge. For others, it's real simple to do. So you just do what you're good at. And, you know, he had a bit of the swagger. He had a bit of the humility. Because he knew. He knew. He came in with a redemption card. And that, ooh, that final fight. That final fight. Oof. Big oof, big mood. You know, what all the kids are saying these days. Which, you know, I started saying ironically and now I just can't stop. Somebody please send help. Anyway, that final fight, ooh, that's just, it's still good. It still gets you. The director's cut for the final fight, I think that would have been a bit better to have the final fight be a little bit longer. And, you know, what the crap happened to Norm between the moment where he's, like, freaking out to the moment where, you know, he's, like, there at the end, at the very, very end, and you see him watching people march off onto the planes, you know, to leave Pandora. You know, what happened to him between that point? It would have been nice to know. Okay, and Trudy dying? That was some BS. Why does she always have to die? Okay, Michelle Rodriguez, here, self-sacrifice. Resident Evil, self-sacrifice. That woman is good at self-sacrifice. Okay, it's not so much as dying as it is self-sacrifice. Well, I mean, in Resident Evil, it wasn't so much a self-sacrifice, but it was more of the rude, annoying, oh, I've been bit, but I'm not going to say anything kind of maneuver. It's been a while. But she gets the Sean Bean treatment. Okay, she does. That's not fair. That's not right. But I mean, like I said earlier, you do what you're good at. That sounded... You know what I mean. She's good at those characters that come in, swoop in, snarky, strong, independent, in your face, and then, through some means, goes from being your favorite character to now is your favorite dead character. Still wrong. Yeah, I happen to think she's kick-ass and awesome, so... As I said at the beginning, this is clearly kind of like Pocahontas in space. But it's also more than that. And as I've punctuated here throughout this episode, it is more than that. There is more going on to this episode than just Pocahontas in space. That brings us to the knowledge that we're getting a sequel. I do have questions that I want answered. So if you have questions about Avatar, the 2009 Avatar written and directed by James Cameron, please hit me up with the questions. We'll start a running list just to see how many of them get answered. For me, mine are Awa. Like, why is it surrounded by the tree of Awa? Awa's tree. Why is it surrounded by ruins of a lost civilization? Okay, what was a civilization? Was that... what the crap was that? Can we get some Pandora history here? Are we going to get Pandora history? I would like a history of Pandora. Screw it. Give me a history of Pandora. Because I want to know why there's so... Those arches. Come on, I need answers. Tell me. Is it a lost civilization? Is it... Are the early Na'vi... Like, what? What is this? Was it another culture that predated the Na'vi, that gave birth to the Na'vi? Are the Na'vi from another plane of existence? What's going on here? Was this some kind of Planet of the Apes situation? Like, what happened? We know that Quaritch and Grace Augustine are going to be back. I don't know how Quaritch is going to be back, because last we saw him, he had two big old arrows in his chest and one pierced his heart. So, yeah, how? How is he going to be back? That's a genuine question. How is he going to be back? And so Grace is going to be returning. Some sort of fever dream of Awa, or is she being reincarnated as a Na'vi among the Omatakai people? How? A couple of those are just going to have to be like, wait and see. But if there's like a history of Pandora, can somebody please send that to me? I would really appreciate it. Really, really would. All in all, I mean, basically the sequel better deliver. Otherwise, I think there's going to be a lot of us who are going to be upset. There's going to be people who are going to be really agitated and annoyed. Plus, we've waited 10 years for the sequel, and we're like sitting here and waiting on, you know, it's going to be 11 years between films. So come on. I really need, you know, answers. As Sheldon Cooper would say, I don't need sleep. I need answers. So before I go off the rail and start fan theorizing on this, I should probably wrap up. While this is an old story, aka Pocahontas, all throughout human history, forced relocations, greed, the subjugating of people deemed less than, yada, 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 all of that stuff. There's some modern depth to these lessons. I think that that can be dissected a little bit more. So if y'all want to discuss some of that with me, hit me up over on Instagram or on Twitter. Twitter would be best. Let's start a feed over on Twitter about all of this. Or on the Facebook page, you know. I'm going to be posting this up on the Facebook fan page. So go on over there, go on over to Twitter, or email me through the website that's been posted up. So let's start a discussion on that, because I think it would be fun to interact with all of you on that. And because, you know, the lessons still ring true today about, you know, morality of the soul, about race. It's also a mirror held up to humanity as a whole, not just one particular group of people in the human race, the human existence. It's not just one. It's all of us. It's held up to our genome. And I think that it's something that could be explored a little bit more. But I'm also kind of worried about the sequel, because it's going to be kind of Godfather-esque. And that concerns me. Yeah, fight me. I'm not that big a fan of The Godfather. Fight me. All right, so not even going to go into that further. Final score of the film is a 4 out of 5. It's been 10 years. It holds up. But as Caitlin said, and I do happen to agree, that there is kind of a stigma around still having any kind of feelings for this film that aren't just kind of like, ew. Because it is kind of been turned into a guilty pleasure. And I think we've discovered a little bit of why. But it holds up. And it, while it's not the best, it did set a bunch of precedents within, you know, the medium of big budget films. And that still holds through to today. I mean, it still looks great. So 4 out of 5. And music, 5 out of 5. Beautiful score. So moving. Just great. Ugh, I love it. One of the reasons why I know it's great is because, well, it's not just, you know, like overall, it's great to me because it's out there and it's one of those. It's very much so you can put it on to relax or get hyped. It's good for D&D. It's good for just any, you know, occasion. You can just set it on and relax and just go to sleep. There's some tracks for waking up, getting moving. D&D. Plus, if you're like me and you like soundtracks, which are basically today's like classical composers, instrumentals, it's really good. And the choir portion to it too, because I was in choir through middle school and high school. And so it's very punctuated by the choir, and that's always good. That's always amazing, and I love it. So 5 out of 5 on the music, 4 out of 5 on the film overall. So yeah, there's that for you. Next up, I don't really know what's going to be up next. Keep an eye out on Twitter. I'm trying to get into using Instagram more, but that one's just kind of there for me. So keep an eye on Twitter, keep an eye on the website. I don't get to posting a whole heck of a lot on the website because my laptop's currently down, and that I spend more time working from the laptop for the website than I do my actual desktop setup. So I'll be getting the laptop back up and working so I can start working on that, doing the series reviews and other discussional things there, breakdowns of series by part or overall. Keep an eye out there. I'll be doing some updates there and on Facebook. So when you get a chance, get on over there. Links, as always, are in the description down below for those who just want to listen to them and head on over. Twitter, @Robert_McPeak. You're definitely going to want to get the link for that. Same with the Instagram account, @RobertMcPeak1191. The website is robertsreviews.home.blog. And find me over on Facebook at Robert's Reviews Podcast. Search that up in the search field or just go ahead, type that in, facebook.com/ Robert's Reviews Podcast, and it'll come right up. I'll be posting up some of the stuff that I've been getting up to recently, things we've been gearing up on. There's some stuff on Instagram and on Twitter about some of the stuff that's been going on. Also, for those who are like, ah, cringe, and you love cringe, yeah, check me out over on TikTok, Robert McPeak, Robert_McPeak as well there too. So go ahead, look it up. Yeah, I did it. I did the cringe. But until next week or next time, hopefully next week, I'm trying to get back into being a little more regular on this. regular duty. Anyway, it's late. I need to get some sleep here soon. So you all have a wonderful time. You all have an amazing week, and we'll see you back here next time on Robert's Reviews. And that's a wrap.